Welcome to Bartender at Large. I'm your host, Eric Castro. And as usual, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in the industry. With me today are
Owen Westman from the Grass Skirt.
Steven Tuttle from the Grass Skirt.
All right, fellas, first off, let me say thanks for joining me.
Thanks
for the delicious tiki drink.
Anytime.
Anyway, man, you guys are working at this place called Grass Skirt, a tiki bar. Tell me about it, man.
Well, we're like a party tiki bar.
Yeah.
It's significantly important to mention that, I think, because it doesn't follow a lot of the traditional norms of a tiki bar, but at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, I think you see the tiki bars that are very, and especially we get a lot of that crew in that's very true to the underground
the
tiki rules
tiki
and all that sort of stuff. But I think we play a nice role in that where we have some nods to that, but at the same time, we want it something for everybody, and it's a fun party in there, and it gets a little loosey-goosey late night.
Yeah, what are like the challenges of doing tiki bar? Because it seems like, you know, you have to make a lot of people happy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, right from the get-go when we were designing it, the first thing, as soon as you kind of let people know you're doing a tiki bar, they're like, all right, what local tiki artists are designing all your wood carvings and, you know, what drinks you're going to be on the menu?
Who's doing your mugs?
Yeah, are you going through Tiki Farm? Are you, you know, how true to it are you staying? And that's almost like the leveling degree of how the industry will judge your bar. You know, the common outsider guest is just coming to have a good time and thinks it's a clever, fun place, but there's this whole other world out there that is judging your every move.
Yeah. Like, ooh, what rum is he putting in his Mai Tai?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about that one. You're like, relax.
That's not a classic 44 Mai Tai.
I know. So do you have those people come in, and do they have just as much fun as everyone else?
Absolutely. I think we get a lot of the... Like there's some hardcore tiki people that really travel around the country. It's actually a really cool thing to hear about, like people's stories about them just driving around the country checking out different tiki bars. I think it's actually interesting. We get a decent amount of those people, and they're always happy. I mean, they notice that the place is a lot livelier than some of the tiki bars throughout the country. But I mean, the drinks are kick ass, and the
I've had a blast the both times.
Yeah. I mean, it's a yeah, we've had a great time with it.
And I love it. You guys got the little like the light show with like the lightning and the volcano and all that.
Yeah, I mean everyone knows Trader Sam's. Trader Sam's is the funnest. It's the best, and we love the idea of it being like an interactive venue for people. You know, you order certain things, crazy stuff happens, and that's I think the fun part about it, and it makes it that.
Often the first thing that people bring up when they walk in is like, hey, what drinks do I have to order to like set off the flaming the flame pit? It's like, it's kind of
it's
really
a timer,
want to give
man.
It away right now. Do you want to?
So is it on a timer or is it when people order?
No, it's definitely on a timer. We hit it from behind the bar and it is interactive. So it depends on what drinks they order and stuff.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, people kind of want to skip straight to the chase. It's like, you know, it's going to be going off every 10 seconds.
Yeah.
This is what we call a tiki foreplay.
Yeah.
You got to work your
way up.
We're not you just blow. Came through the steamy cave. Why don't you just
chill out
that
for a second.
First.
We don't want to blow your mind to
that. No, but it's a beautiful space. And the thing I really dig about it is that you guys, it seems like you're making, it's in a part of town that doesn't historically have a lot of craft cocktails in San Diego. But I go in there and it's all everybody's drinking.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think tiki is actually I have never done this before, but
it's a gateway drug.
Yeah, it's a really good a really good way to actually bring fine cocktails to a new area because it's fun and less sort of intimidating. You know, it's people walk in, they see like bendy straws and ceramic parrot mugs and all this stuff, and they're like, hey, these guys aren't taking themselves too seriously. It's, you know.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, the beach area is there's not a ton of people doing drinks out there, and we were kind of like, oh, we're gonna be the first through the. First through the fire to kind of put something out there a little bit different and for fun. Tiki just is like the perfect for that. Just that. It's a gateway drug. People think it's either just a fun, kitschy bar and then the drinks are actually really, really good.
And we kind of thought that people would come in, maybe order one, maybe two cocktails at the start and then they'd move back onto like sort of,
get back into the
draft beer and vodka soda and no. Not at all.
Yeah,
like, we have been doing nothing but drinking cocktails. We have had to rethink things. It's crazy.
You told me you guys like had to redo your well.
Yeah, we recently redid the entire well setup because we were like, it's the first couple months in. You know, people are, of course, are trying all the drinks first, and it's absolutely, it's nothing vodka soda turn and burn about it. It's all tiki cocktails, and it's crazy.
Yeah.
And so we're really having to, on the fly, readjust how we're putting out the drinks. how our well setups are, everything, everything, and especially when we come into a, you know, doing our next menus and stuff like that. Every menu we're gonna have to think about that going forward, but. It's wild. It's fun.
No, because I'm thinking like the two times I went in. The first time I went in like a little bit earlier, and you know, me and my wife, we had some food and drinks, mm-hmm. and it was like it felt like a restaurant, you know. But I noticed as it gets later, it almost becomes like a club. Like
true.
People are partying,
absolutely.
Like people partying, are
drinking.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, the food's really good. So
the
when
food's
you,
great.
So yeah. when you, so it's kind of it's one of these places like that just sort of merges throughout the night. And we slowly dim the lights a little bit more. Mm-hmm. The DJ comes in on the weekends and stuff like that. So it totally turns into a party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's the fun part about it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We do the tiki thing, but we still like to have a good time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Bar.
And then the clientele that's come in there, how is it? Because you guys are getting a mix of locals who know you guys now, you know, after, yep. you know, 6 months in. But then you also have the balance of, like, tourists.
Mm-hmm.
How's it, like, balancing those two?
Well, I think, I mean, tourists...
Because at the beach, you get a ton of tourists, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's going to be picking up more throughout mm-hmm. summer. A lot of people have heard of us. They come in and they're like, they already know
cool.
A lot of people
that's
come
amazing.
In, they already know what they're going to drink. You know, a lot of them come in, yeah, they're with dishes on their mind that they've already heard of. Everyone sort of comes in with a preconception.
Yeah, we see a lot of, kind of what we thought might happen was like, oh, we're going to get, you know, how's the beach crowd going to adjust to this? Are we going to have a lot of walk-ins? But we get a lot of the crowd that is kind of, we've been waiting for so long for something to come to the beach. Because, you know, we all live in San Diego for the great weather and the beaches. Why can't we have really fun places and really solid places at the beach, too? Why is everything got to be, you know, nothing against the beach bars. They're all great, but why is everything got to be that way?
Yeah,
when you come in.
Diversity.
So mm-hmm. people are coming in that, like, care about, like, really good food and are kind of foodies, and then we get the cocktail people. But yeah, it's a mix. We get a lot of people that have already heard of us that are coming in just to check it out, which is awesome. It means the word's spreading really well. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's cool. And then how are the other bars in the neighborhood? Are they like, receiving you guys well?
So far, you work the Sunday night, so you probably get more of the industry.
Yeah, we get a lot of industry people coming in. We treat them really well, and they're kind of blown away by the place as well. You know, they even the people that work
it's
in the
experience.
Industry. Yeah. Even the people that work in the industry haven't seen this pop up in PB yet. So it's they're all having fun. We look after them, and you know,
when we opened, the first thing we did was like, oh, we got to go spread our love. So we went jumping around from bar to bar, restaurant, dropping off mugs, gift cards, telling them to come by, have mm-hmm. some drinks on us. And we really wanted to be welcome into that neighborhood because I can see the industry supports each other. Sometimes people that they don't really like all that much might
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to be seen as these arrogant guys walking into a new area.
Oh, we're going to show you guys
that. Yeah, yeah.
But get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, but they've been all welcoming. They're all really, really nice when they do come in. They're very happy and we like them. Take care of them.
Yeah,
that's actually, that brings up the topic that, you know, just kind of thought of right now, where it's just like, you know, we've specifically told, I remember our bartenders when we first opened Polite and other spots we've done, even Rick House, it's like, you know, you almost have to send out like the, what's the term, like not ambassadors, but like the, when you first open, you almost have to like have like a genuine effort to mm-hmm. just go out and hit other spots.
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Tonight we open, you know, we've been trained all week, we're all tired. Tonight we're going to go out and just tell everyone about the spot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And tip fat, and be good to people and spread the word.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think it was, I mean, that's 100% what we did. I mean, we know, we didn't want to be a place that got a bad rap. We wanted people to know that, you know, we want them in there. We want them to come drink. We want to take care of them. And we want to come visit them too, which is like a big
thing. Kind of a tight-knit group of bars in that area too. I mean, that street is people bar hop and the bartenders go to each other's bars on their nights off. So it is actually like a community of bars that you're walking into. You know?
It's funny. Have you ever like had like a dollar bill or something and wrote something on it? Like, and then seeing how often that dollar bill gets passed around through the same industry people? Because, you know, like you get tipped out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go see them on your night, and then you tip them.
Yeah, the tipping bartenders where you're just passing money
and
around.
It's the same like $20 bill around. Yeah. You're almost like, hey, let's just like, it doesn't even make the. If we just all stop tipping each other, like it wouldn't even matter because we're in the same circle.
Oh, you know? I had it.
Maybe you should just put all your bartender tips in one big pool and just have a massive party at the end of the
That's not a terrible idea.
Yeah.
My buddy and I, that we had that rule between each other when we come visit each other. He's like, don't ever tip me. I'm never going to tip you. What's the point?
Yeah, I think it.
Take care of each other when we're at each other's
place. Because otherwise, you're literally just passing money back and forth to each other. Like, I'm off on Thursdays and you're off on Tuesdays, and we hand you 50 on Tuesday and you hand it back to me on Thursday.
You might just, yeah, exactly. You might as well just like pass that $100 bill back and forth to each other.
Oh, man. When I used to live in Sacramento, I used to live in Midtown for about a year, and all the bartenders, there was all like a really tight community of bartenders. And I remember one of us wrote like something on a dollar bill, and it's like 3 weeks later, I'm bartending on a Friday night, and that dollar bill pops back up, and you're like,
yeah.
There's definitely been like when I'm spending time at Kettner Exchange, mm-hmm. and when we had Christian Siglin down the street and we had Eric Johnson down the street, we definitely saw a very large amount of boomerangs flying around there, which was always entertaining. But it was they were coming through customers too. Yeah. It wasn't just a bartender showing up with one. It was a guest going up and be like, are you Stephen Tuttle? Yeah. This is from Eric Johnson down over at Juniper and Ivy. Yeah.
Those are so funny, man. I like the idea of a boomerang. I feel like it's sometimes they get out of control.
Yeah.
It was like somebody sends you like, oh, this is like, it's a 151 or something.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Get the fuck out. I'm not shooting this like right now.
Time for
you
that.
Know?
Yeah.
Like the Guinness, the Guinness key still goes pretty strong though.
Oh, what's that?
You get that one's. You'll have to ask Trevor Easter about that too, because he loved it. It's any like new bar back or whatever. So new bar backs, don't listen. But we tell them, we got to tap this keg of Guinness, and there's only a handful of keys floating around that the distributor has in order to get the coupling on. If you can run down, we just let Ironside borrow it. Can you run down there, grab it, bring it back so we can get this keg going? It's usually like you're like really, I'm ready to work hard guy, and by this time we have a shift covered, but they'll jam down there and he gets the Ironside and ask for the bar manager, and they're like, oh, we just sent that one down to down over to Henry's gas lamp, but do you want a shot?
Yeah.
And then a lot of the times, you're not leaving here until you take a shot with me. Fire it off. By the time they get about 7 bars deep looking for this key, they come back and they're just like, man, I can't find it anywhere. I guess we're going to have to skip the keg. And you're just like, all right, that's no worries, but have you been drinking?
It's like a hazing tradition.
Oh, my God. It's so fun. Some of them catch on really quick, though.
Yeah. We used to tell people that they had to empty out the hot water from the hot water machines.
Oh, my God.
You see, you'll be out here soon. Man, all you gotta do is empty out the hot water machine, you'll be good to go. And then they're just like emptying out pitchers. You can't do that now because of the drought,
Yeah.
But it was funny because you come back and it's. I remember one person was like, "Oh yeah, I'm not falling for that. I know you're messing with me." And I touched the water pitcher and it was hot, and I was like, "I gotcha."
That's another pretty good one. I love those things. They're so good.
So, Owen, I used to work with you at Rick House in San Francisco.
Correct.
With 2009?
Yeah, buddy.
And then you moved back to Australia.
Yeah. In 2010, I think it was, yeah.
And how long were you down there? You were back home for what?
It's nearly 6 years. Yeah, I think it's just under. We actually purchased a bar down there before. Mm-hmm. We actually made the purchase before I left San Francisco. So we went straight from the airport into the bar and sat there for the first week when we purchased it. So yeah, it was 6 years of bar ownership there, which we still have, and I've come back I was getting a bit stagnant down there for me and locked into that position. So I decided to come back.
So what are the biggest differences you notice between bartending in Australia versus America?
Number one, obviously, tipping culture, you're not working for that. Drinking culture-wise, it's actually not, they're not dissimilar. It's a lot more expensive in Australia to drink. So things like high-end spirits and stuff are more for special occasions. You know, you won't see people drinking anything above the well often because it's just out of your price range. You know, I think we pay $70 for a bottle of Rittenhouse 100 for the bar. While that is a fantastic whiskey, it's not by no means like sort of high-end. Yeah. You know, I think I bought a bottle of that in a liquor store in Vegas for $7 once. So that's another major difference. The other thing is
this is wholesale for bars.
This is wholesale, yeah. Yeah, we got to remember we don't actually pay a lot less for our spirits than what the customers can pay at the major liquor store. It's like literally like $5 difference sometimes.
Oh,
and then we got to make a drink out of that and still make it affordable to the customer. So it does get pretty hard. The other difference is the I guess the embracement of technology is a little bit.
We're talking about Apple Pay today.
Absolutely, yeah. And a lot of people don't even know what I'm like, you guys invented it in America and you guys don't use it. Like,
it's in California.
Yeah, because I was just thinking like,
for the last
yeah, specifically, like, yeah. I was just thinking like when we, so on Friday, Saturday nights, it feels like 50% of the time I'm signing credit cards, you know, I'm collecting 3 slips, handing it to the customer. Whereas in Australia now, you know, you've got PayPass, you've got Tap and Go, you've got Apple Pay. There's a bunch of apps where people can just sort of set up a tab where they enter the venue. And even if they walk out without paying, it automatically like closes their tab at midnight. So yeah. I think it's interesting. I feel like there does.
But how much do these apps take for fees?
Yeah, they do take a little, they do take a little sting. I mean, to be honest, the apps aren't heavily used because they kind of, it sort of only works if everyone in the party has the app. And they're great in premise, but they, you know, there's so many competitions. It seems like every day, when honestly, owning a bar in Melbourne on a main strip in the sort of mall area, is like every day 2 or 3 people come in with this groundbreaking app that's going to revolutionize the way people purchase drinks in the hospitality industry. You're like, well, it sounds pretty similar to the guy that came in like 10 minutes ago, but sure, we'll give it a crack.
Getting those guys instead of liquor reps.
Right? Yeah, that's what we get. It's just a bunch of like...
Because we always boot them out when they come in. They rarely come in, but here we're like, get the fuck out of here. Yeah,
don't bother, bud.
Cash money, bro.
Yeah. No, that's the thing, you know, and nobody uses it anymore.
Yeah, no one pays cash anymore.
It's very, you know, it's very rare, like, to actually see cash come over the bar. It's down to, like, 10% of the sales, possibly, here.
Even recently, I mean, even, like, in 2009, it was, like, 60% cash, yeah, 40% cards. And then it's, like...
It's all cards now.
And then now it's just it's crazy. rotated, and now it's, like, almost, like, 90% cards.
Yeah, absolutely. Easily,
which is so much worse.
And nobody leaves a tab open anymore either. Yeah. Everyone just wants to swipe every time. Right, yeah, it is. It slows the bar down a lot.
I think it happily, but it's just annoying.
Yeah, I mean, look, there is a thing. Like a lot of people are like, you know, I don't want to leave my card because I always get drunk and leave it, which is fair. But at the same time, you know,
it's really like, man, that was your first beer, bro. Come on.
I know, seriously.
Come on.
I'll give you
a heads up before you look like you're going to leave your card here.
I hate it when it's like 3 friends and then they all pay separately. Like,
well, that's the thing.
You can't just buy your buddies around. This is how it works. You buy the first
round.
That's
how you know whether
they buy
friends.
The next round.
Mm-hmm. I got an order for 5 beers the other day and then got handed 5 credit cards from the same person. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
And then they start.
Oh, there goes 10 minutes.
Yeah. I know. God. Like, come on, buy your money or beer, man.
Yeah, seriously.
That's the worst. You forgot to mention the difference in espresso martinis in Australia.
Well, I guess.
This is a whole new world I didn't even know about.
The espresso martini. I think there's a espresso martini festival in Melbourne now.
Yeah.
It's
the official drink of Australia.
Well, it kind of has become that. I mean, it's actually a great drink. I love the drink.
Yeah, it's a fantastic drink.
It's a beautiful drink. It's a sexy drink.
Look it up.
It looks cool. You know, it's but it's just there's other things. So it does get it's kind of the bartender's nuisance in Australia.
It's almost like it's its own family in Australia, right? Where like
do their own things to it. You know, you can add chocolate. People put cigar infusions into the. You know, they make it with rum. Well, we never did that. That's I think it. What is it here? I mean, here I think it's the margarita, which is
appropriately
margarita or mules.
Yeah, the mules are mules and margaritas, but. Yeah, I guess that's one of the
never ends.
Yeah, the margarita is one of those drinks here in San Diego because of the Mexican influence that like people order them all year round.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like what's a killer before drink? Dinner, during dinner, after dinner, late night, daytime, whatever.
Doesn't matter.
Can drink a margarita any time of the day.
Yeah, and I don't really get sick of making them either.
No, and every time
it's easy. Usually 3. It's easy.
Well, espresso martini's not the espresso martini's a bit annoying because you have to draw the espresso and you know if you're doing it for real, a lot of people just keep a bottle of cheat espresso in there.
I can just see someone come in and be like, oh, espresso martini, you mean like, guys, I got this.
Yeah.
Relax.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, it's just like, we were talking about just doing drinks that were, you know, get obnoxious. Even when we have a blender at every well at Grasker, and when we put that out there, we're like, oh my God, blended drinks are going to be the worst, but it's really not that bad.
Oh, the blended drinks, to be honest, the most amount of time we spend on anything is the garnishes.
Yeah.
And the garnishes aren't any more intense on the blended drinks. And honestly, having a Vitamix in front of you is just not really a hindrance at all.
No, plus the blender, you know, when you time it out right, you make that first. Yeah. You get that going, then you build your other rounds.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's
yeah.
ready to go.
That's just another step in your like order of operations of how you're building rounds and rounds of drinks, and it kind of honestly saves your arms from shaking too much stuff all the time.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, yeah. If you get an order for like 10 blended drinks, you're like, oh man.
You're like, that's a little, you know, we only have a number of
three of them are like Miami Vices, which require 2 blenders per drink. You're like, oh man, come on.
Yeah, right? Sir. So someone has to make a decision for you, right?
Yeah, you gotta, like, guys, I need your blenders.
That's where the slushy machines are starting to come in handy.
Yeah. Oh, you guys have slushy machines too?
Yeah, we've got one machine with 2 different drinks on it. So, yeah, that does, it saves a little bit of time, but at the same time, it's still the garnish.
The garnishing is just the longest and most time consuming. Yeah. So getting down to that, because it's still fun. It's part of tiki. Everyone's a punk garnish.
It's beautiful when you spend all that time on the garnish and they just literally grab it and go.
You're like, thanks.
Oh, yeah, it's
you're right, all right. No umbrellas and mint next
no
time.
No sweat at all.
Yeah. So what have you guys done to like speed up the garnish process?
To speed up the garnish process? I mean, we don't want to make it less impressive. Mm-hmm.
So it's all
just about having everything literally ready to drop into the drink, which we didn't necessarily have at the time. So sometimes you've already got the spear through a pineapple, you got your mint already, you know, the cherry already wrapped around in a grapefruit zest, stuff like that. But it becomes
a team effort in that, where like anybody, employees that have downtime, whether it's servers or buses or everybody kind of pitching in on the experience, and it's part of the experience. So when you know, we're seeing our teams start to come together more and more and more and pitching in on that end of the things, because the bartenders are so busy. You know, they talk about a couple of the best guys that we have there and are some of the best in the industry here have just been like, it's really hard bartending.
Yeah.
And it's not easy. And so having everybody pitch in like that and seeing the bar and restaurant kind of come together is it just really cuts down on all that and then makes the experience a lot better for everybody that comes in.
Even when I think about just like learning the recipes, you know, it's like I feel with, you know, more traditional classic cocktails, you're like, okay, you know, sour, 2 3/4, 3/4.
Yeah.
Bee's knees, 2 3/4, 3/4. Jack Rose, 2 3/4, 3/4. It's like they're all kind of the same. You're falling off the same formula.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to tiki drinks, you're like, they make no sense whatsoever.
We still use it a little bit.
Yeah.
We kind of took that idea and we took that concept and we made like 6 major like tiki families, like a Mai Tai, a Pina Colada, a Zombie. And we based a lot of our recipes are like, okay, well, if you're using this much citrus and this much kind of enhancer, which is more like the passion fruits and pineapples, and then this much sweetener, and then just swapping out spirits and all that, kind of the same way you do with sours. That was kind of our approach of how we took tiki drinks, and it's helped with building rounds and the efficiency. And I mean, for me, it helped out a ton with remembering recipes. But it's still there's so many different exotic flavors that we have going in these drinks that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's all about repetition, just like bartending anywhere.
Yeah.
The more you get the reps in, the more you get used to the drinks.
Even that's part of the garnish. You know, just having made those garnishes over and over again, you start to. I mean, I remember the first time. I think it was like day 2 or 3 when we had the bendy straws, and I was like, I spent like 2 minutes like tying them together. Now I'm like, shoom.
I remember that happened my first trip to Lost Lake. I was like looking at the straws, and this girl just the bartender. She was awesome, and she just goes up, makes a drink, just poof, and puts it out, and it's like this bouquet of straws. And
yeah.
Like, this might take a while.
People are like, how do you decide like what bend to put in the straws? I'm just like, whatever the gods will allow, man. Shoom.
That cracks me up, man. All right, man. So in terms of like complicated drinks, what would you say is your most complicated cocktail? Or with most ingredients?
Most ingredients?
Or is it the same thing if they're separate? Yeah.
Well, most ingredients doesn't really come into play.
No,
when you've got some the liquor batches,
yeah, because it's all rum
blends. That's what it is, you know. It's I mean, you've got 7 rum blends, 3 rum blends, and so like even if there's 7 rums on the list, it's still one bottle.
Yeah,
so that's cool. That's smart.
Muddling is still probably the.
And we took like the tiki and iki was kind of our, I'd say the most time.
Yeah, most ingredients.
Yeah,
yeah, because of the 3 fruits.
And then we ended up just throwing in the slushy machine. And
yeah.
Now it's the easiest drink.
Now it's like this. Right on.
Tiki, tiki. What would you recommend?
Definitely. And it actually works better in there because it, like a lot of those, the slushy machines, the thing about them is I think there's just a little bit less water that goes into it when you Yeah, when you blend them?
Yeah, there's...
As opposed to blending it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just slightly less. It just gives it a slightly richer flavor.
You control the water content way better with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, in the volume content's always 100% accurate. Mm-hmm. You're not... It just really cuts down that step when you're measuring precisely how much dilution to put into it and then just pouring it out of the machine. Yeah. You can't miss a beat with it.
Yeah. So. Plus your bar backs can form too.
Yeah.
Service can pour.
Service pour.
Stuck in the
service
well.
I think I saw the chef pouring it the other night.
Yeah,
I don't know who it was for. It wasn't the right glass before. Either.
It's just in one of the cork containers.
It was a cork.
I don't even think he was using a glass in general.
Yeah, just wheezing the juice.
But yeah, no, it's the. They're definitely, I'd say we're a lot better at what we do now. Of being a few months into it and more efficient, which will be fun when we change a whole new menu and have to do it all over again.
Yeah.
And the menu's pretty decent size too. It's what, like 20 drinks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's about 20, a couple punch bowls. We're going to start adding a couple more. We've got more mugs coming in from Tiki Farm. And so we're going to do some releases and slowly add things, take things off, kind of just change it up a little bit. We really want to see, I would like to see a lot more like agricole going through, mm-hmm. getting people in that. It's so fun to use, and so it'll.
Yeah, it's a like a lot of people come in. Like it's people that want to come in and just like have a rum. And people are like, hey, what rum would you recommend? It's like, oh, you have opened up a can of worms there.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
You just turn back and look at the wall.
Yeah. A girl was like, she was absolutely amazed that we had Mount Gay Blanc the other day. She came in
really?
Yeah. I was like, that surprises you? There's like 200 rums behind me right now. It surprised you that we've got Mount Gay. Yeah.
No, because it you know, that's the best thing about rum. It's so diverse of a category. It's like someone comes in, you're like, recommend a rum. We're like, for a daiquiri, for an old fashioned,
absolutely.
For a Mai Tai. What are you talking about? You know. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you're in the mood for, and then we can move from there.
Yeah, that's the fun thing about that spirit. I mean, it's a blessing and a curse, the fact that it's not so heavily regulated, mm-hmm. in that it can be so different. Every single pour, there's just tons and tons of rums out there that are suitable for particular cocktails, flavor profiles, whether you're a whiskey drinker, whether you're a tequila drinker, almost to an extent. Mm-hmm. It's really fun category to get involved in. And I've never done a project where it's been like, this is our focus, this is our spirit. It's always been, oh, we dabble a little bit more in one over the other. So to really dive into it and then meet all the people that make it.
That's rad.
Like, I got to spend a week down in Venezuela with the Diplomatico guys, and just hearing the way they approach the spirit versus listening to Ed Hamilton talk about it.
Yeah.
It's really neat. We got to meet the master blender from Mount Gay. He came in not too long ago, and that was just a whole new can of worms to hear him
talk.
That's
such a damn good rum, man.
Yeah. And he used to fight. Someone asked him, like, well, what's your favorite rum that you guys make? And he's like, I haven't made it yet.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Like, oh, man, that's... I'm going to leave now.
All right, fellas, I'm going to let you guys go, but first I want to ask you guys, do you guys have tiki names? Because aren't you supposed to have a tiki name?
I don't have one. Everybody comes into the... Any one of my friends that comes into the bar think he's me. Oh, just because we have
absolutely.
A beard.
Absolutely, yeah. It's the beard that does it.
And then you pop your head up and then start speaking to them in an Australian accent, and they get really confused.
It's
really
so
fast.
Taken aback, man. It's crazy.
Because we happen to work at the bar like opposite days. We, you know.
This one guy actually started getting angry at Tuttle for not recognizing him while he was talking to me. He's like, I knew you wouldn't remember me. I'm like, I have no idea who you are. He goes, wait, where are you from? I'm like, Australia. He goes, oh man, I'm sorry, I thought you were Tuttle. And you're accusing Tuttle of not remembering you. Amazing.
So write that guy's name down.
How often do people ask you, like, oh, so where are you from?
It's the standard response to every time I speak. It's literally. I get so sick of saying Melbourne, Australia, I just tell people I'm from Albuquerque, New Mexico these days.
What do they say?
They're like, wow, I would never have picked that.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I know, people usually don't because of the Australian accent.
That's comedy.
Yeah.
All right, well, fellas, thanks for coming on, man.
Cheers for having us. Cheers.
Thank you for watching this episode of Bartender at Large. If you like what you saw, don't forget to like, subscribe, or leave a comment below. Also, don't forget to check out bartenderatlarge.com for upcoming tour dates of the Bartender at Large documentary.